Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. During our show on COVID-19 vaccines in January, we received way more calls than we could take on air, so we decided to dedicate a second hour to the discussion. There have been some big developments recently. There was a public health order warning of fines for people and providers who cheat to get the vaccine sooner than they should. New Mexico started receiving the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine last week after its emergency approval by the FDA. And this week, the health department pledged to get teachers and all education professionals at least a first shot of vaccine by the end of the month in order to help New Mexico's public schools open for in-person learning by April 5th. It's a lot. And there are still questions about how the vaccines are different, how to get registered, and who's being prioritized for shots. Today, we'll talk to an infectious disease expert, some medical doctors, a community health worker, and the Department of Health will join us for the second half of the show, all to help answer your questions about the COVID-19 vaccine. We want to hear from you also. Are you having trouble registering for the vaccine? Maybe you want more information before you commit to a shot. Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 277-5866. My first guest is Dr. Linda Gorgos, an infectious disease physician with Access Research and Health. They're studying COVID-19 treatments for people who already have the disease. For information on that, find a link to Access on the post for this show at kunm.org. Dr. Gorgos knows a lot about the virus and the vaccines. Good morning, Dr. Gorgos. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show today.
Absolutely. We're happy you were free to join us this morning. COVID-19 is a particular viral disease. I think we've all seen the pictures of the spiky ball that looks like a torture device. Can you briefly tell us about the virus?
Sure. The coronavirus that's causing our current pandemic is called SARS-CoV-2. And although these coronaviruses have been known for a long time, they typically in the past have just caused things like the common cold. However, this is now the third coronavirus that's emerged to cause severe illness in humans. So we had the original SARS outbreak in 2003, and that virus is now called SARS-CoV-1. We had the MERS virus in 2012, and then in late 2019, the emergence of SARS-CoV-2. And the illness that's causing is called COVID-19. And I have to say, this virus has just continued to surprise me over the past year. But I think there are a few things to note as part of our discussion today that really stand out to me. And that is that this virus really causes such a wide range of illness. It can be anything from minimal or mild symptoms to really severe illness that's landing people in the hospital, in the ICU, or unfortunately leading to death. And we can pass this virus from person to person before someone even develops symptoms, or in people who don't seem to have any symptoms at all. And that has been such a game changer that's different from other respiratory viruses. So that means for us, for SARS-CoV-2, all those public health measures like masking and physical distancing are so important to control this virus. And I think as, you know, an infectious disease doctor, what's really struck me is that this is really more than just a respiratory infection. You know, this is not your typical cold and flu. We have seen people develop really severe complications from COVID-19 that affect multiple body systems, the lung, the heart, the brain, blood vessels, and this unique ability to really cause a lot of inflammation and immune system problems that seem to cause damage beyond the virus itself. So we've seen people get very ill in the hospital. It's been quite difficult to treat. And then we've seen people who have these long-term side effects from COVID-19. And sometimes you'll hear this referred to as long COVID or post-COVID syndromes, where up to a third of people get these lingering side effects for weeks to months after the initial infection. So I think there's one thing I've learned about SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19 in the past year is we're always going to learn more, and we really have to be prepared for changes and really rapidly adapt to that.
Right. And when we're speaking of changes, I guess the reality is that there's not even just one COVID virus anymore, right? What are some of those new strains that we've been seeing, and how much should we be worried about those?
Yeah, so this is a really hot topic, these viral mutations, and you'll often hear them referred to as viral variants of concern. And I think these mutations will have an impact on us on both a global and national level. Coronaviruses, like other RNA viruses that are related, they just have this natural ability to develop mutations as they make copies of themselves. So this is an expected thing to see with coronaviruses, but we are certainly seeing it happen, you know, on a very fast pace over the past year. And the mutations that are concerning right now are those mutations that are affecting a part of the virus that you mentioned, that spike protein. And those spike proteins are kind of studded in the outer surface of the virus. And the virus uses that spike protein to latch onto the human cell and then get inside the human cells to cause infection. So it's a key part of how that virus sets up an infection to start with. And that spike protein is the main target right now of our current vaccines and for certain treatments like monoclonal antibodies. So okay. As we're seeing these mutations develop, we've seen them in multiple areas of the world, and the issue is that they could potentially affect vaccines and some of the treatments we have available. So I think the bottom line is, yes, we do need to be concerned and be actively looking for these virus variants, but the most important thing we can do right now to slow these variants down is really actually push very hard to vaccinate people. So that we can actually contain the virus. It sounds a little counterintuitive, but the fewer infections we have in the community, the less chance for these variants to continue to develop.
Okay, we already have a caller, W.R. in Berlin. Are you there?
Hello, that was fast.
Great. Good morning. What's your comment or question?
Okay, as I told the screener, I've already gotten the Pfizer vaccine first for your Department of Health folks who are on later. The registration could have been smoother. I registered in December, and then they changed the requirements, and I went back and added to it. Also, I am scheduled for the second dose, which I found out by looking on their website. I have not been notified by them. I believe in personal responsibility, so you have to watch for what's going on. Looking around, Smith's, which is owned by Kroger, Kroger has a list of their various stores in states that have gotten the vaccine. We have not gotten in New Mexico. Kroger stores in other states have gotten the vaccine. Also, there was an event in January. I live in senior housing. The service coordinator had set up a vaccination coming to the site, and that didn't work.
Okay.
Supposedly, another source is having it done today.
What was it like getting that Pfizer vaccine? How did it feel?
Oh, my arm was a little sore. I had discoloration. I got it on the 24th of February. My arm was discolored till about a week ago, and my arm has very slight soreness.
Okay. Well, we're glad to hear you're doing okay for now, and hopefully you get that second shot right on schedule. Dr. Gorgos, there was a lot there about distribution. We can come back to that with the Department of Health later. But WR got the Pfizer vaccine. There are three different vaccines available, and they all kind of work differently. What are those vaccines, and what are the differences?
Yeah, so all of the vaccines that are in development or available really focus on developing immunity to that spike protein. So the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, those are called messenger RNA vaccines. They both work in a similar way. They actually use a small piece of messenger RNA, and I think of that as like the instruction sheet, and it tells our cells how to manufacture that spike protein. And it's a really clever way to deliver that spike protein to your body and produce it naturally so the immune system gets stimulated to protect us against SARS-CoV-2. And that technology has really been in development for many years and has proven to be really highly effective in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines that are currently available. The second category of vaccine that you already mentioned are vaccines like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and these are called viral vectored vaccines. The other ones in this category are the vaccine from AstraZeneca and the Gamaleya vaccine, which is a vaccine produced in Russia. And these COVID vaccines basically use a modified version of something called adenovirus, which is something that causes the common cold typically. But they use the adenovirus just as a delivery vehicle to introduce that spike protein. And the adenovirus has been modified, so it can't actually make you sick. It's really just a way to deliver that spike protein message. And again, then your body naturally produces that little spike protein to start the immune system off. What's going to be coming soon is what's called a protein-based vaccine, and that uses spike proteins that are actually produced in the lab, and they manufacture these little spike proteins, and those are assembled as tiny particles, and then that is delivered as part of the vaccine, and this is the technology that a company called Novavax is using. So you'll hear it called a protein subunit vaccine, and that's similar technology to something that's already being used in a common influenza vaccine.
Okay, so how much do we know about how the different vaccines are going to be effective against the newer strains and mutations?
That's a great question. So just to kind of frame the discussion, remember that these vaccines have been tested in different places in different time periods. So the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were tested early on in the epidemic before many of these variants emerged. The newer vaccines like the Johnson & Johnson and Novavax vaccines have been trialed both in South America, including Brazil, and in South Africa, where some of these variants have emerged. And what we've seen with both J&J and with Novavax is there is some decrease in the vaccine efficacy against some of these variants, particularly the variant that's emerged in South Africa. But I think the important point to note is it doesn't wipe out the effect of these vaccines. And in fact, when you look at both of those vaccines in terms of protecting against the most severe forms of COVID-19, like going to the hospital or dying, the protection against those severe forms is really, really high, like 85-95% protection against severe forms of illness. So this is really something that's we're going to know more and more over the next week and months, but I want to encourage people to really get vaccinated now and not wait in terms of getting vaccine.
Well, now I'm wondering, could the virus mutate to the point where the current vaccines are no longer effective?
You know, I don't think we know that yet. I mean, what we're seeing is maybe some smaller changes. I think the hopeful thing about this is really that the vaccines we have can be quickly modified to deal with these variants. And the analogy would be what we do with flu vaccine every year. So influenza vaccines get adapted as the flu vaccines change over time. Well, we can do the same thing with these COVID-19 vaccines. In fact, we can probably do it faster. The technologies we're using are really adaptable to these new variants. So a lot of the vaccine companies are already developing updated vaccines to deal with these variants. So we're kind of in this, you know, rapid change mode of adapting to these new variants. So I think we'll have vaccines that are protective, but I do anticipate we may need boosters, we may need different vaccines over time, but we have the technology to deal with it.
All right. Things we don't understand can be scary. Some people are worried about taking the vaccines. I've seen it on social media, along with the claims of supposed dangers like DNA mutations and, you know, warnings about pregnancies. Is there anything to these ideas? What sort of caution should we practice?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because we always want to know about side effects and what to expect with getting vaccinated. And, you know, I think there's a lot of information and sometimes, unfortunately, misinformation out there. So I rely on really, you know, reading the science. And I think we have two really good sources to understand that. You know, we can look at people who got vaccinated as part of clinical trials. And then we can also really get information from real-time, real-life situations of people who are currently getting vaccinated. And the CDC is actually collecting information on that from a system called V-Safe. It's something that I participated in after I got vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine. And it asks people how they're doing after vaccine, whether they had any short-term side effects like that sore arm or muscle aches or fatigue. It's also collecting information whether people had any long-term problems after vaccination. And they're going to be collecting information about women who are vaccinated during pregnancy or may have become pregnant after vaccine. So when I've looked at the science, I really feel very reassured. Okay. I mean, I tell people, hey, expect a sore arm, expect some mild side effects, but we aren't seeing long-term problems at this point with any of the vaccines.
All right. Here's a question for our listeners. Have you registered online to get a COVID-19 vaccine? If not, or if you had problems, let us know. Call 277-5866 or tweet to us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We need to go to a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We'll be right back.
Support comes from UNM Health. To reduce the spread of COVID-19, stay home, and when it is necessary to go out, go alone. Also, wearing a mask, staying 6 feet apart, and washing hands often are some simple steps to help stop the virus. Support comes from Canteen Brewhouse. Locally brewed beer, growlers, crowlers, six packs, and root beer are available. Dine in and carry out Monday through Thursday, 2 to 7, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday, noon to 7 available. CanteenBrewhouse.com.
Composer Astor Piazzolla was born March 11, 1921. He revolutionized tango music, adding elements of jazz and classical, and he made the sensual sound of tango popular all around the world. We'll celebrate 100 years of Astor Piazzolla on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls about COVID-19 vaccines. Are you worried about side effects? Give us a call at 277-5866 and tell us what you've heard. I'd like to go ahead and bring in our next guest right now, Dr. David King. He is the Assistant Medical Director at Southwest Care in Santa Fe, where he runs the respiratory clinic. He's also a pediatrician. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dr. King.
No problem. Thank you, Kaveh. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Southwest Care has been giving out, I think, Johnson & Johnson and Moderna vaccines for a week or two now. Is that right? Why those two?
Well, so, you know, in New Mexico and throughout most of the states, the distribution of vaccine is done by the Department of Health. And so the Department of Health has looked at the individual applicants to the individual organizations that are willing to give vaccine. And they have to look at what our equipment is and what vaccine they're getting available from federal distribution. So for Southwest Care, we have the ability to give all three vaccines. We have an ultra-low freezer that would have allowed us to get the Pfizer vaccine. We have a low-temperature freezer that allows us to store the Moderna vaccine. And then we also have a regular, not technically a regular refrigerator like you would put food in, but a medical-grade refrigerator that allows us to give the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So last week, we were notified that we would get the Moderna vaccine, which we're extremely excited about. And then shortly thereafter, we were notified that we would get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So our choice for the vaccines, we were willing to give any of them because looking at the science, like Dr. Gorgos has said, they are all phenomenal vaccines. But our choice was whichever vaccine we can get because that's the right vaccine for us.
I understood it. It took a while for your clinic to get your hands on any vaccines. Can you kind of tell us about that process?
Yeah, so the Department of Health has been very receptive, and they are doing the best they can to get vaccine out into the community. Some of the first vaccines were in the larger areas. As you might recall, Kaveh, the 1A vaccine tier for those folks getting the vaccine was predominantly healthcare workers. And so the state pushed those vaccines out to organizations that they felt could get those vaccines in the arms of healthcare workers. And the reason for that was pretty obvious. The people that are taking care of the very sick and the very ill are healthcare workers. And so we want to make sure that our hospitals, the place where folks go to the ICU or go for inpatient care, were taken care of, because earlier on there was a shortage of healthcare workers because we were getting sick as well. So that was their first goal, was to get those folks vaccinated. And then the second goal with Department of Health was to get that Tier 1B, which is older folks over 75, and then folks with comorbidities that would make them have a greater risk of having severe disease. And so we fall into that group, that organization that would be able to vaccinate the 1B tier. So we did that group, and we're very thrilled that we were able to get our patients, as well as some other groups, their vaccines.
Right. So priorities keep changing as kind of the supply of vaccines changes and, you know, other circumstances, who's infected and so forth. I want to take caller Mike from Albuquerque. Mike, what's your comment or question?
Got the Moderna kind of accidentally because a pharmacy had a dose left over, and now I'm having a devil of a time getting the second one. But the question is, they're talking about trying to get at least one dose into a teacher's. I mean, will one dose of Moderna or Pfizer do anything to protect anybody? It seems like you have to have two doses in 2 weeks.
Right. So the state announced Monday that they would start prioritizing educators for vaccines to help get schools open next month. Dr. King, will one dose provide enough protection to get the schools open and be a safe place for our teachers?
You know, the one dose is a good goal, and we've heard the conversation about getting one dose in for a couple of months now, and the answer is yes, one dose is better than no doses. However, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines in their trials were predicated, they were designed on that two dose series. So we know that about 2 weeks after your first dose of Moderna or Pfizer, you do get an immune response that is protective. It's not the best immune response. That best immune response, that 95% that we've heard about, is at that second dose, 2 weeks after that second dose. So do we want our teachers and our loved ones to get just a single dose? No, we don't. We want them to complete the series. And we want Mike to complete that series as well. And I understand that it's a devil of a time to get that, especially if you if you're not fully qualified. But the reality is, a single dose is better than no doses. You get some immune response, a decent immune response, but you don't get the best immune response. And so the goal to get our teachers in with that single dose is a great one. And the reality is, if you're administering vaccines to a large number of people, and if you look at the number of teachers in the state of New Mexico, that is a large number of people. And so can we get two doses spread 3 weeks apart by the first week in April? And the answer is, that's just not logistically possible at this point. And so having that first dose in, that's what is ideal. And then maybe in that first week after they return to school, or the second week after they return to school, we'll get that second dose in. And that second dose is what brings us up to that 95% protectivity.
Okay, well, now we're talking about people in schools, teachers, but there are also students there. And I think caller Lynn in Albuquerque has a question regarding that. Lynn, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I have a question in terms of kids and teenagers. I wanted to ask the epidemiologist or the other physician, how are things going in terms of, or what's the future looking like in terms of having a vaccine available for kids and teenagers? I have a soon-to-be 15-year-old, and does it look like she'll be able to get the vaccine or a vaccine anytime soon? So it's personal, and then also in general, wanting to know about vaccines for kids and teens.
Dr. King, you're the pediatrician. I think this question's for you.
Sure, that's a great question. So right now, the information that we have coming out that's public knowledge is from the three EAU vaccines, so emergency use authorization vaccines. So none of those vaccines have actually been tested in people under the age of 18, with final data being published on those. We do know that both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine have started their trials in kids. The age range for those varies. Some of those trials that are going on with all the vaccines currently that are in trial for kids, some of those range from 6 and older, some of those range 12 and older. But remember that it takes a little bit of time to get those vaccine trials running. And so what we're actually looking at, the last information, the data that I have, is that data should be available sometime in the summer, like we're talking July, August. So we currently do not have a vaccine that's indicated for people under 16 or 18. The Pfizer vaccine has extrapolated data, and so it has an emergency use authorization for people 16 to 18 based on extrapolated data. But the actual data on kids is currently being run in trials by the FDA as well as the manufacturers. And so we expect that we will have some of that data around August, and the ACIP and the CDC, those are two organizations that make recommendations for vaccines. Once they have that data, they will probably act on that, as long as the data is good. And I think the data will be good. I don't foresee the vaccines working differently in kids versus in adults. And I think that we just have to wait. And it's frustrating as a pediatrician to say, I know we all want the vaccine, but we have to wait until that data comes out. And I think that it will. It will be the summer.
Okay, we have another caller. Sarah in Albuquerque has a question for us. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to first comment. I got my first Pfizer vaccine a week ago at the Pitt here in Albuquerque, and I was pleasantly surprised by how well it was ran. From start to finish, they did a great job, so kudos to them. Secondly, I wanted to know, with all these variants, is the vaccine something that we should consider, or will we start to see a request to get this every year as an annual shot, kind of like the flu shot? Or is it like one time and that's it?
Okay, I think this is probably best addressed by Dr. Gorgos. What do you think?
Yeah, great. That's a really good question. And I would say the answer to that is going to evolve over time. So the studies looking at our current vaccines like Pfizer and Moderna, those studies are actually going to follow people out for 2 years. And that will help give us information about how durable or long lasting those initial vaccines are. So we don't know yet if we're going to need, you know, annual boosters or increased frequency of dosing over time, but we will know that down the road. I think just as you mentioned, that could also be impacted by these variants. And that could mean we might need booster doses that cover variants or vaccines that actually cover the original virus plus variants in a single dose. Again, a lot of this is going to be really rapidly changing and evolving over the next months to years as we get more information. So those are great questions, and I will stay tuned with the science along with you to see what happens.
All right. I'd like to bring in another guest. We're grateful to have New Mexico's Deputy Secretary of Health, Dr. Laura Parajon, join us for the rest of the hour. Dr. Parajon took leave from UNM's medical school to help combat COVID-19. Before joining the State Department of Health, she helped direct Albuquerque's COVID-19 response for people experiencing homelessness. Thank you for being with us this morning, Dr. Parajon.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. We are still hearing from people that they haven't had contact from the Department of Health about their vaccine. And we've heard that could be due to registration issues, like it wasn't done completely or properly. How can people confirm their registration or get help if they need it?
Yeah, so if people haven't heard from the app, so basically if you get on the computer, you go to the COVID registration app online, you should be getting right away after you fill out all your information, you should be getting what's called a confirmation code, and that's the number that's tied to your name, the confirmation code. Depending on where you fall in the priority phased list of priorities in New Mexico is then when you would be called for an appointment. And then if you do get called for an appointment, then you get what's called an event code. And that event code allows you to schedule an appointment. So if you haven't heard back for a confirmation code, you should definitely go back into your registration app and make sure you filled everything out properly. Make sure that all the spaces that they ask questions in, that you fill it out, and then you should be able to get your confirmation code. Right now, in terms of the phases, there's phase 1A, which basically it's the healthcare workers. So we still are vaccinating healthcare workers who maybe they didn't get vaccinated in the first round, and they're still, you know, concerned that they haven't gotten vaccinated and they decide they want to get a vaccine, that we're still doing that 1A group. We're currently prioritizing 75 plus, so anyone over the age of 75, as well as we are currently prioritizing as well anyone 16 to 74 with severe comorbidities that put you at risk for severe COVID. And then most recently, due to the presidential decree, we've started vaccinating educators. So when you think about if you're in a category of a person who doesn't have comorbidities, or you may even be a frontline essential worker or essential worker, remember that there's about 700,000 people with comorbidities in New Mexico, so that you do have to go through a very large group before they get to the next phase. So that's kind of when we share with people about the app or the vaccination, we share that, yes, we're, you know, we just have to be patient at this point in time. We know that people want vaccine, and we're really excited that people do want their vaccine. And as soon as you get an appointment, please take that appointment. But we just, yeah, want to let people know that there is a lot of, you know, there are a lot of people still on the list waiting for a vaccine.
Okay, I want to follow up on the registration system. It's internet-based. What about those who aren't tech-savvy or don't have internet access? Is there a way to register over the phone?
Oh, absolutely. So if you aren't tech-savvy and you want to call by phone, there's a phone number to call, which is basically the COVID hotline. Let me pull that up for you.
While you work on that, I'm going to read an email from, let's see here, lost it. There we go, Tamara. She's 76, she's being treated for cancer, and she's the caregiver for her 93-year-old husband. She had the first Moderna vaccine at a drugstore, but they didn't give her an appointment for the second. Her first shot was February 12th. Tomorrow's 4 weeks, and she hasn't been contacted. She wants to know what she should do next. Did you find that phone number, Dr. Parajon?
Yeah. So here's the phone number to call. The hotline is 1-855-600-3453. So if they can call the hotline and they can let them know what happened, they'll be able to direct her to the person that needs to get follow-up for her. The issue is that once you get your vaccine, there's up to 42 days that you can do additionally to get the vaccine. If you've gone past the, you know, it's a total of 6 weeks between doses that you can have as a leeway. So even if she didn't get it at 3 weeks, hopefully she'll get it within the 6 weeks. But we are prioritizing boosters. So please call the hotline and let them know your confirmation code that they got, and they can usually, you know, route her to the correct location or correct place to get her another appointment.
Okay. So, Tamara, you have a little bit more time. We will get that phone number up on our website after the show. We do need to go to a quick break, but first, we want to know, do you have ideas that can help get vaccines out to all New Mexicans more quickly or easily? Call 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org and tell us what you think. I'm Kaveh Movahed.
In addition to creating problems for your lungs and heart, contracting COVID-19 can damage your kidneys. The National Kidney Foundation says Native Americans are already at a greater risk of kidney disease. But there are ways to lower your risk and keep your kidneys healthy. We'll explore more on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
It's spring cleaning time, the perfect time to clear that old car out of your garage or that old truck out of your driveway. Maybe you've been meaning to get rid of it but haven't gotten around to it. KUNM makes it easy to donate. One phone call and voila, everything's taken care of. We come and tow it away. You get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and it helps us pay for the programs you love. So don't put it off anymore. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We've covered a lot already this morning, and there's still time for you to call with a question. Are you wondering when your name will come up for a vaccine? Call 277-5866. We're going to go ahead and take another caller. We have Carmen in Rio Rancho. Carmen, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I am a parent of three children, and of course, with the new changes for school opening up in April, I've got a question as I've seen some of the PowerPoints from my school district, as well as information from the PED about teachers in particular, and how they will no longer have to quarantine if there's a positive COVID case in close proximity. And what I'm not understanding anymore is that my understanding is those of us that are vaccinated, we still could potentially be carriers of the virus. And so why would we, it seems contradictory that we would now not have those teachers in that classroom have to quarantine because they could still spread it. And even that teacher that's vaccinated could still take the virus home to their own children or other unvaccinated family members. So if you can help distinguish between the immunity versus that we can still be carriers even if we're vaccinated, and why would we now change the way we're doing quarantining for close COVID contacts in our schools? Thanks.
Okay, maybe Dr. Pajaron could first talk a little bit about the rules, and I wonder if then Dr. Gorgos could jump in and talk a little bit about shedding the virus and the differences between kids and adults. Excuse me, Dr. Pajaron?
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks so much for bringing that question up. That's a really important question. The rules around vaccine are changing rapidly because of new data coming in regarding the vaccine and its level of immunity. Several different rules have come out recently through the CDC, including that right now the CDC has put out that actually you can go visit nursing homes now, your loved ones at the nursing home, even if you haven't been vaccinated. So these rules are changing really rapidly. And so I think that what's happening is just some of the rules for the schools are maybe not catching up to the rules from the school is going ahead of what maybe the rest of the rules have coming from at the epidemiology department. But thanks for bringing that up. And I will talk to the epidemiology department today, that they're the ones who set out the rules for the, you know, whether or not we quarantine, how long we quarantine for after immunization. I know that they are looking at that very carefully and looking at it from a population perspective. So I will get back to you on that and follow up as soon as I can for what the updated rules are.
Okay. Dr. Gorgos, are there differences in the ways that kids and adults shed the virus? And then should we worry about quarantining teachers if, say, a student tests positive?
Yeah, and I think I'm probably a little better answering the question around can you shed virus after vaccine. We do know there are some differences between children, it seems, in terms of their ability to pass infection onto adults or other members of their household. But I think more relevant to this is, do those vaccines not just protect against illness, but protect against carrying the virus in your nose or respiratory tract where you could pass it on to other people? And we know that the original studies of these vaccines looked at infections where people had symptoms. And that's where that 95% protection level comes in for the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. What is being looked at in the trials and is not fully available yet is exactly what your caller asked, is if I get vaccine, could I still possibly get the virus in my respiratory tract? I don't have any symptoms, and can I pass it to someone else? Now, the emerging data looks like we are going to get protection from that. However, the full study data is not out yet. That really depends on basically taking people in the vaccine trials and swabbing their noses repeatedly over time to look for those asymptomatic infections. And data out of the AstraZeneca trial that's been released in a preliminary form looks like we are getting protection against those asymptomatic infections, at least to a level of about 75%. We don't yet have data on that from the Moderna and Pfizer and Novavax vaccines, but we will. So I think we'll know more about this issue, and that will actually inform how we address things like quarantine and public spaces like schools. But we need a few more weeks or months to get that data out of the trials yet.
Okay, I want to take another caller. We have Ted in Santa Fe. Ted, are you with us? Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, I'm just wondering why it's so easy to go to Colorado and Texas and get a full course of vaccines, and it just seems like it's not that easy in New Mexico.
Okay, great question. Dr. Parahong, could you address that? Is it easier to get a vaccine in Texas or Colorado?
I have not tried to, but it may be. I'm not sure. The issue is that every state gets a pro rata allocation, meaning based on your population, you get a certain amount of allocation. So it's not really based on demand. New Mexico has a really high demand for vaccine, which is why I think that people are waiting in line for the vaccine. That bodes well for New Mexico in the sense that if we have a lot of people getting vaccine, then in the end, we'll have greater herd immunity because so many people have gotten the vaccine, want a vaccine. So at any rate, you know, I don't actually know what's happening in Texas or Colorado in terms of their vaccine allocation program. But I do know that in New Mexico, we are getting every single dose, almost every single dose out. We're actually currently number one in the nation for both speed at which we get out doses and the percent of doses that we use. So both our efficiency and our speed is really fast in New Mexico, which means as soon as we get doses here at the DOH, we're getting them out to the community. So I think what's happening is that it's not an issue of, you know, New Mexico not getting our doses out fast enough here. I think it's an issue of we have a lot of demand. We have been prioritizing the older groups. Older people are at higher risk for death if they get COVID, or they're at high risk for getting very sick. So we are still vaccinating people over the age of 75. We have over 60% of our 75-year-olds to go, but there's still many, many over 75 people that we still need to prioritize and get. So I'm not sure what's happening in Colorado and Texas, for instance, but perhaps there's a lower demand, and so therefore you can go across and get a vaccine. New Mexico is unique in that we do have a central registration system, so we're able to get everybody on the COVID-19 app, vaccine app, and so that allows us to push certain groups that are more vulnerable by being able to identify those groups and then, you know, push that group to the scheduled appointment. So I hope that answers your question, but it is a demand and a supply issue.
Okay, right. So it seems like maybe we have a more orderly process and that might slow things down just a little bit. I'd like to go ahead and add one more guest to the conversation this morning. From El Centro Family Health, with clinics all over northern New Mexico, we have Chief Quality Officer, Medical Director, and also a Physician's Assistant. Good morning, Matthew. Are you there? Matthew Probst.
I am here, Kaveh. Good morning, beautiful New Mexico morning to you and to the other panelists.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. Your clinics are in places like Española, Taos, and Las Vegas, but also smaller communities like Embudo and Truchas and Springer. Has COVID-19 affected those smaller communities differently?
Well, yes, I would say absolutely. There's differences, you know, and great answer there, Dr. Parajon. I think not only more orderly, Kaveh, as you said, vaccine distribution, but more equitable vaccine distribution. And so, you know, that's the wonderful thing. It might be easier if you have resources to get a vaccine in Colorado or Texas, but what about folks that are the most vulnerable? And so that's what federally qualified health centers do. We're the federal public health safety net, if you will. You know, our New Mexico Department of Health Public Health Services Division being the New Mexico version, and we work together in New Mexico very closely as partners to ensure that we are that safety net for the most vulnerable population. So El Centro Family Health, a federally qualified health center serving seven counties of the Northeast region of New Mexico, a service area the size of West Virginia, you know, absolutely COVID response, COVID testing, COVID treatment, and now COVID vaccination is going to vary much. It's going to look different than it does in a place like the Metro.
Right. So you just brought up the rural challenge of kind of big, vast spaces. We got an email from Lee in Española. She lives in northern Santa Fe County with an Española address. She says last week she got a notice for an appointment in Española, but was too late for an opening. And this week she got a notice for an appointment in Tierra Amarilla, at least an hour's drive away. She doesn't even live in Rio Arriba County. She wants to know why she's getting notices for vaccines so far away. I wonder if Dr. Parajon has some insight.
Yeah, sorry. Hello. Yes. So I also just want to clarify, too, that because of our app, we're actually being able to be faster than most, you know, than like we are like number one and getting vaccines out. So I just want to clarify that. It's okay. Not that we're slower. It's just that we have a higher demand for the vaccine. Mm-hmm. In terms of the way the app works, the app actually tries to first get people in that. And thanks so much, Matt, for clarifying, too. We're able to identify people who are 75 and over, people with comorbidities more easily through the app. So what the app does is that it first does a certain amount of mile radius so that it's closer, so that you can be closer to a vaccine. But then if your vaccine sites are all filled up in the area, then it goes to a larger radius to try to pull people into the vaccine. So one thing that you can do is that the most important thing is to show that you show interest. So if you do get called for an event, try to schedule an event. If you're not scheduled for an event, you're actually in a waiting list. You're not put back into the pool. You're actually pulled into a waiting list area so that when vaccine becomes available again in your area, you'll be called in. So just keep on, my advice would be to say, just keep on saying yes, you'll schedule an event. If you can't make that event, you know, then just, keep on, if you already showed interest that you want the vaccine, then you can wait to get a closer vaccine. But if you can get to the farther site, I know it's very far, if you can do it, I would try to get that. But if not, then just, you know, you'll be waiting in the queue for the next time that your area has a vaccine.
Okay, I have a question for Matthew. Since we're talking about more rural counties generally, are the vaccines getting out there?
Absolutely. So let me just add this to the caller. What a beautiful drive to Tierra Amarilla, where I was born and raised. And so, you know, get out, enjoy that beautiful drive if you can. You know, it'll be an awesome experience if you've never been up there. And so, yeah, and so absolutely they are. And I can speak for our partners, our sister organization in Las Clinicas del Pueblo and in Tierra Amarilla, another federally qualified health center. They're doing an excellent job of vaccine distribution. You know, they might be the leader in terms of, if you look at, you know, size of an organization, the leading FQHC in New Mexico. So because they've had a good saturation point, as Dr. Parascon has said, in their radius, they just increased their radius last week from a 25-mile radius in the app to a 60-mile radius. And so, you know, it's all of us working together, and we have these conversations all the time. New Mexico just crossed the 1 in 4 vaccinated with the first dose line. Our service area in the Northeast region, if you look at our counties together, we're at a 1 in 3 folks vaccinated with their first dose. So we are, you know, as Dr. Parascon said, being fastest, we are leading the country. New Mexico is, and the Northeast region is leading New Mexico. And why? Well, that's because, you know, working together and collaborating, neighbors helping neighbors, that's our way. That's easy for us. You know, we've built resilience over the years of, you know, being underserved and not, I should say not underserved. I'd like to say under-resourced. When there aren't a lot of resources, the only way to get things done is to work together. So we already have that collaboration built in. We have that resilience of doing a lot with very little resources. And in doing that, working together, we've been able to be a vaccine ready, if you will, as partners. We heard that earlier, the earlier shots, you know, yes, in Santa Fe, you know, the first shot was given at Christ de St. Vincent. So, you know, Southwest Care wasn't, you know, only got vaccine here more recently, but the first shots in our region, El Centro Family Health was another one of those vaccine distribution sites that got first shots. Why? Because in our rural counties, some of them don't even have a hospital like Christus, much less some of these more rural communities within a county. So, you know, if you look at Mora County, they don't have a hospital. So how do we cover, you know, them, you know, much less a community out like in Tierra Amarilla and Chama that, yes, they're in Rio Viva County, but that's a long way from the hospital in Española, which is the vice versa of what that caller said. Man, I live near Santa Fe and I got to drive all the way to TA. Well, think about those folks in TA that when they need to go to a hospital, they got to drive from TA to the closest hospital or be transported to the closest hospital in Española. So we've learned to work through that. You know, we're leading region, working together and doing so in a very equitable fashion.
Okay, so is it just culture that's different in rural areas, or are you and other healthcare providers doing something different that could help in Albuquerque or Las Cruces?
I think there is a culture that's developed of neighbors helping neighbors. Absolutely. That's how the Rural West was founded. So it goes back and it's, you know, generational, ancestral. That's a cultural thing. And that's how we get by in hard times, whether it's a weather event or it's a pandemic. And, you know, that's that piece. But I think the other piece is collaboration and that working together. You know, there's no turf battle here. This is, you know, there's a battle. It's all of us together against COVID, but we don't have to think about, well, you know, what's the market share and what's the, you know, the business of healthcare. Instead, we're working together, collaborating our efforts between clinics, you know, and it's exciting to hear like Southwest Care and other clinics here in our service area now receiving vaccine to vaccinate their own patients. But, you know, before that, you know, vaccinating the 1As, you know, we had a goal and that was to get all the 1As vaccinated, you know, at the beginning of the vaccine distribution, all of us working together to get all the 1As vaccinated before the ball dropped on New Year's Eve. And, you know, of course, all that wanted the vaccine, we're not forcing people, but we were able to accomplish that, all of us working together on that mutual goal and that team effort. And then, you know, 1B, you know, we've got this goal of getting all our 75 and olders that want it by the end of this month. And then, you know, now we've got the Ring the Bell initiative with schools. And I'll tell you, yesterday I coordinated COVID vaccine events for 11 rural and frontier schools.
I'm sorry, Matthew. We had to cut you off because we have run out of time. It went way too fast. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. We couldn't get to everyone. Thanks so much to our guests, Linda Gorgos, David King, Laura Parahon, and Matthew Probst. Vaccines are a big topic that nearly everyone has some interest in, and even with this second show, we couldn't address everything. We'll keep covering COVID-19 and vaccines on KUNM, but please keep sharing your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us, letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, we'll have the audio up on our website soon, or subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you find podcasts. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. He's celebrating a birthday today. Happy birthday, Marino.